Welcome to the Athenaeum Review podcast. We're here at the Reading Room in Dallas on the occasion of the exhibition Eddie Leon Returns, narrative work by Ray Madison, aka Linda and Ed Blackburn, which runs through December 7th and is curated by Caleb Bell. I'm here with a curator and artists to have a conversation about this body of work, as well as a broader conversation about their work and artistic careers. So thank you all for being with us today.
Thank you.
So Caleb, I thought I could start by just asking kind of how you came to do this exhibition and what sparked your interest in this body of work.
Well, I mean, it's kind of a long, you know, kind of process. I worked with Ed and Linda both on projects at the Tyler Museum of Art in 2017. And it was really kind of in preparation for that I ran across Eddie Leon, this body of work by Ray Madison. And it has a unique history with the museum, which is really something that really sparked my interest in continuing this. And then I just thought it's really fresh work that really hadn't been seen in a while. And so I thought, you know, let's bring it out, seen in this context. I was also thinking about the Reading Room specializing in the intersection of image and text, and I thought, you know, this is really like a perfect fit. You know, why not?
So when we walk in and look at this exhibition, we learn about Eddie Leon. Eddie Leon is a sign painter who's also a private detective, and we learn something about his adventures. Eddie Leon is an artist who's the creation of the artist Ray Madison. And Ray Madison is the artist who is AKA Linda and Ed Blackburn. So I wondered if I could ask the two of you how you came to think of the idea of an artist who's creating another artist, kind of how you work out all those layers.
You have always worked in media as your art, and how media can be transformed from one media to another, and time is usually involved because you did those, you did newspaper drawings and paintings, and then you did movies, and they had to do with media, and you transformed media into prints and then more drawings. So there were always kind of some of the same subject matter being moved from one thing to another. And I think it was kind of interesting that somebody made that point about you like the idea of time going by and how a movie is a still, but it still it still stands for something else, and it's a moment in time when you make a painting of a particular. And yet, it's a painting at the same time. It's kind of a classic idea of, you know, it's gone through several stages, but it's showing you that a painting, a classic painting, can be made out of something as simple as a movie's gem.
You know, there's a practical answer that we usually give, and it's real, in the sense that we, when you're an artist, you're always trying to figure out how to make the economic side of things work out. You know, what jobs do I need? What jobs can I miss and not have to have? And then where does your art fit into it? So anyway, we tried to think up something that would be a job that we would like doing okay. Anyway, we thought, let's do a comic strip, see if we can get it syndicated.
But you had always done comic strips since you were a kid.
Yeah.
You know, he made them up when he was 5 years old. Oh. Cowboys jumping on the cliffs and drawings of him because he was totally involved in the visual, even as a 5-year-old.
Well, and you even used comics like Nancy and, you know, some of that in your work, too.
Oh, so, I mean, that's true.
Yeah.
I probably got it from him, though.
was this, and you both have had very distinguished individual careers as artists, which I want to ask more about, but was this the first time that you'd collaborated on a kind of joint artistic work like this, officially, so to speak?
I think formally, it was the first time, though we had, seemed like we used to do projects to get art back in school.
Yeah.
We would do things together, but we didn't sort of settle down and say, okay, it's going to be a series of works.
Yeah.
Until we did this.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's the way my memory of it.
Yeah. Sometimes some of those early works, we couldn't tell the difference if it was your pen or mine. When we were in school, like that.
Yeah. It must have been an adjustment to. I was curious about kind of your working process of, you know, saying like, all right, we're gonna work as a team, and this is going to be our joint product.
No, I don't think it came that way. I think it was just that you had this idea of a story, and you love stories, movie stories, any kind of stories,
yeah.
And so that idea of creating drawings, a strip, it's almost, and it's kind of akin to. What is it in the we do the drawings, Hitchcock.
Storyboard.
Yeah. It's like always been interested in storyboards. So the comic strip was just kind of a natural thing for him to involve in his particular story. And as it went along, I sort of came in and was able to, he would do the pencil drawings of a strip. And then I would do the inking, and then I would usually do the color, and then we would talk about together, which sort of say, you know, should this be this or that, and kind of work together on that. But then that's kind of the way it evolved in this body of paintings too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we really, it was kind of loose at first, but after a while we kind of had our assigned roles.
Okay.
And when you read about or look up somebody who does a comic strip, they all break it down and say somebody did the pencil and somebody did the
right,
ink,
right,
or the same person, whichever. So we had, you know, not only pencil but ink, but then color.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I always did the pencil and sort of found the form, but we shared whether it was drawing the black line or painting it in a painting, we sort of shared that.
Yeah, and
but she did it all.
Yeah,
she did almost everything. You know, she'd pick out the colors, and I would tag along. You know, I'd kind of be surprised. Like, do you think you're on that? Yeah. So she had it was her color sense in this whole thing.
So for people who may not have yet seen the exhibition but might listen to this, can you just tell us a little about sort of who this Eddie Leon is and what his story is, what his situation is? Kind of introduction.
Well, just in one sense, you go ahead. It's made up from scratch,
right?
In one way, certainly. Has all these traditions behind it, from film war to pulp fiction to all that, you know.
Yeah.
And I guess also underneath it is the idea of pursuing art to make it.
Yeah.
But so he's pursuing the stolen art, and he's a private detective, but he's also kind of an artist. He's a sign painter.
Yeah.
So he kind of functions as a person that's an adventure character in this type of story.
Yeah.
But he's also sort of like an artist looking for, looking to make, to discover.
Yeah.
Which is what artists are always doing. Yeah. You know, discover how to make something red. So that's kind of the underlying premise of Eddie.
Yeah.
The name Eddie is, you know, my name, but I don't know where Leon. There was a theater in Amarillo, Texas, where I grew up. It was called the Leon, so that's probably got in there. So
yeah.
And Mark Thisaway always called it Eddie Leon.
Oh, sounds kind of French.
I just
did
it
up. High art.
We were in the audience when the first time he talked about it. He pronounced it that way, and we kind of had to not laugh, like, oh, it's Eddie Leon he's talking about.
Right. So there is something you may have, I think you mentioned in your conversation with Mark, I wanted to ask about kind of this, the general relationship between painting and narrative. So we have, I believe you'd also mentioned the Heights Movie Theater in Fort Worth that screened, you know, these classic old movies, I think maybe noir and western, things like that. And so mm-hmm. so the movies have the narrative and comic strips have the narrative, but then a painting, you know, like a single painting is, you know, it's arguable whether narrative is kind of fits with the, you know, looking at a single painting in the same way that, you know, a movie or a comic strip. And I think you may have mentioned the kind of tension between narrative and painting. So I wondered if you could maybe comment a little more on kind of that, like how much is it about telling a narrative or is it about kind of that tension between narrative and painting?
Excellent question, seriously. Yeah, so we probably have our same, we both have a take on that. So.
No, you go.
No, you go.
No.
You can well,
yeah, to me, it's like you're kind of talking about the heart of how these operate. There is that tension because narrative, I mean, Karen deals with art that's in and out of narrative.
Yeah.
And these pieces to us, I think, were the narrative doesn't really, I mean, it's from the premise that the narrative doesn't really belong in painting and drawing.
Right.
It's time.
Yeah.
It's got time built into it.
Yeah.
And the whole tradition of art, particularly modern art, is a singular one imaged one moment.
Yeah.
You can see it all.
Yeah.
So you put time in there and attention. It's yeah. like it doesn't quite fit in yeah. a painting drawing.
Yeah. And then there's another thing too, is that a lot of times the words act visually as a flattening device, and it really sort of big on formal qualities, so that learning from Suzanne that idea of creating a tension between something flat and three-dimensional, and so the words or the balloons or whatever, the letters even, you know, act as a tension between the three-dimensionality of the image and the flattening of the canvas.
Talking about some of the flatness actually reminds me, there is, if we're thinking about kind of art history and periods and all that sort of thing, sometimes these terms might come up of, say, you know, the pop art, 1960s, and there's postmodernism kind of from the 1980s. And I'm curious in terms of, and I don't know if Caleb is a curator, if you have comment as well, the sense of kind of these different periods of art, if that's something that you think about at all, or how you might define the work in relation to those kind of historical periods.
Uh-huh. Yeah, but you want to talk
about that? Yeah. Well, I mean, just from like my personal standpoint, I mean, I definitely think it's definitely rooted in pop art aesthetics. I mean,
yeah.
Very much. Kind of just the colors, the content, you know, I just think it kind of fits in, you know,
yeah.
aesthetically there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think to answer your sort of question in a way, I think we think about that all the time.
Yeah.
Because when you're thinking about something that can be viable as art now, you're just thinking about where are we?
Yeah.
And where's the perception at large? How's it operate?
Yeah.
What's it used?
Yeah.
And pop art was such a watershed and opened so many doors
yeah.
of two-dimensional subject matter that has that two-dimensional life, and it's brought into that world of other dimensions.
Yeah.
And then that two-dimensionality is used.
Yeah.
And postmodern is really built on that, to my feeling, that it used that field that exists as a two-dimensional element.
Yeah.
And then it put an image on top of that.
Yeah.
And to me, that's kind of a nutshell explanation of what postmodern is.
Yeah.
And so we even back then, postmodern hadn't quite been a term probably when we started these things, but it was still an underlying premise.
Yeah.
That because we had done stuff that you had a surface some way that was from some two-dimensional element in the world.
Yeah.
Brought it in and you drew on top of it.
Yeah.
And instead of the usual field, it's already 2D field.
Yeah.
So anyway, we think about that a lot. And so it's an underlying element. And it's all about, when you make an art, it seems like it's all about how can you make something that you can really see.
Yeah.
That, you know, that's the determining factor, I think, about can you make good art? It's like, well, I don't know, can you see it? And that all is hinged on not only what's available now, where are we,
yeah,
but that essential 2D, 3D balance is,
yeah,
underneath all painting and drawing, and everybody comes at it like, how am I going to work this?
Yeah.
And so that's, you know, the things that we've been talking about here about where this came from in comic strips and all of the past and all that.
Yeah.
It's real important part of it, but it's always like, how can that be used,
right,
to make an interesting painting and drama? And I always thought that we were doing these comic strips from a standpoint of like, well, it's a strip.
Yeah.
But when I look back on it now, I realized from the outset in figuring out what kind of form is that comic image going to have.
Yeah.
It, right off the bat, did away with any kind of illusionary thing that's in a comic.
Yeah.
You don't usually think of comics as illusionary, but if you look at a comic strip and you have a dark shape under for a shadow, that's an illusionary element.
Yeah, yeah.
We immediately stepped away from that. All the marks, you know, none of them have that.
Yeah.
They have contour to build form.
Yeah.
And when you establish it that way, and you blow it up even that much,
yeah,
the other kind of form starts right away to get kind of screwy. A big shape is just kind of this floating blob.
Yeah.
But if it's a contour element, this actual mark on a piece of paper or a canvas, you can just keep going with that.
Yeah.
So it made me realize we never did really want to make a straight comic strip, though we thought we did. We had in the back of our mind that we were making art.
Yeah.
By the fact that we did it that way.
Yeah. I also wanted to ask, kind of stepping back and at least mentioning some of both of your other work as well. Some of the different series of paintings, Bible paintings by Ed, and the bee landscapes by Linda, there's certain subject matter, well, where if you talk about the subject matter, you say, oh, it's, you know, it's from the Bible, or it's from Western movies, you might, without actually seeing the work, you might say, oh, well, that's kind of like very familiar mainstream kind of culture that anyone, you know, anyone living in this country would recognize. But when you actually look at the paintings that you've done, it's this, to me, a very kind of surprising twist. I don't know if you'd call it, if it would be considered pop, or if you wouldn't want to put a label on it. But I thought that, I guess, in both of your work, there's this way in which you take a subject that may seem like something we know or something very familiar, but then as you artistically work on it and create a visual treatment of this, that it's quite surprising. So I guess my question might be, how you think about the subjects that you find, and then kind of what you do with them. It's a very open question.
Yeah, good question. No. As you're talking, I'm thinking about those bee. Would you title that show
Bee Landscape?
Bee Landscape.
Yeah.
That you might speak to the way that you titled them after Perry Mason.
Yeah, I just wanted to do generic landscapes, but make everything up.
Yeah.
So that gave it a different. And then I did start with black and white, and I had a black a black border, so it felt like a film strip when I started them. But I think it was just the idea of trying to find out, and I think this is what all artists do, is trying to find or go and listen to what it is you want to do,
yeah.
And know that if it's what you want to do, pull out of yourself, then it must be you, and it must be valuable,
yeah.
Because it's not like anything else. And so whatever it takes to get to that point, you know, to just go on total intuition and just go on saying, I'm not going to do what's trendy, I'm not going to do what's out there.
Yeah.
That was done in Art in America last month. I'm just going to see if I can pull up and do what I like.
Yeah.
And that's what I did on those. And that's what I've always done on even Western paintings.
Yeah.
And you have, he has a completely different way of approaching it, in that in his is more thought out and carefully contrived. His is, I mean, and it is just a more thinking man's way of doing it.
He's sort of the Marlboro man. this kind of discussion is really interesting for us, because we do find out things, you know, we intuitively interact, speak about it.
Yeah.
We kind of discover how to step back and think, oh yeah, we're pretty different. And things like that, you know.
Yeah.
So, but we learn a lot from each other as artists. You know, I can step back far enough to say we really have some strands that interact a lot.
Yeah.
But we have a lot of differences, you know, and different way of approaching it. So, that is a sort of surface, but meaningful breakdown that Linda's by far the intuitive one. And I knew that the first day I met her,
yeah,
that she was doing a very loose painting on the floor.
Yeah.
And I had no sense of how that worked. Uh-huh. And that was my first time I ever spoke to her, was, how do you do that?
Okay.
Really, that was it. And she just said, you just have to do it.
Yeah.
So I, you know, okay, I have to do it.
Yeah.
I've been doing that ever since.
Let me ask the kind of contrast you're just talking about. Does that play out in a certain way with Eddie Leon in terms of how you kind of figure that out together?
Yeah, I think I refined him. His natural way would be to do it a bit more shaggy.
A bit more what?
Shaggy.
Oh yeah.
And I would come along. And
yeah.
Make the lettering a little better, and so therefore they both qualities, so that's a good thing.
Yeah, it seems like there's, you know, the creative tension.
Yeah,
yeah, the balance is nice.
Yeah, yeah.
It makes it work.
Yeah,
it's and we've noticed over the years that Linda's work, mine will often get funky and loose and scruffy and those kinds of things. And my palette is much more sort of controlled.
Yeah.
But it still ends up that way. And hers is the other way around. She just sort of slops paint around, but then when it ends up on the canvas, it's real clean and it's real
crisp.
Yeah.
Specific. And
not always, whatever. Yeah.
I mean, these cowboy paintings that she's doing now, you probably wouldn't characterize them that way, but there's something.
Ordered, perhaps, more than, even though they're loose and floppy, they're still ordered. You know?
They're clean looking.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, and your palette is, you don't worry about
that. I'd like them to be really classic and solid. You know?
Yeah.
Whereas his is not. His idea of classic solid is flopping around more.
But we just wing it a lot. I don't know if that was part of your question.
Sure.
In terms of how we arrive at these.
Yeah.
And then when we do something like when we worked on the Eddie Leon movie, when we went to work on a project together, particularly a video or a movie, we can have a lot of arguments about things and then go away and say, come, then one will come back and say, well, I think you're probably right about that. Yeah, so it just takes that a little bit of time to pull it together.
When you mentioned at a moment ago when you first, the two of you first met, I wanted to ask, so I know that you studied together and then there's you both got the MFA in Berkeley and then there was in California and New York and then you've been here in Fort Worth for some time. Just looking back, I was curious if either in your studies or since then, if there were certain moments or I don't know, I guess influences or certain kind of things from your going all the way, you know, back to your education that sort of really stuck with you and kind of helped form your artistic vision, that would just come to mind as a key moment in kind of creating educationally where you were coming from at the beginning of your career.
You started this Bishop.
Yeah. I don't know, school, I guess we have to speak from it from my own standpoint, but school to me was certainly valuable, but not maybe as, I didn't tune into it as.
Yeah.
It was nice being around other artists, and I know you save a whole lot of time when you go to school. Yeah. Stuff comes up, and you would have taken a long time to get around to learning about.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, I was always kind of felt like I was, maybe everybody feels I was just kind of doing it on my own a lot. And I was kind of focused on what I wanted to do as an artist, but I was a little bit distracted from everything else.
Yeah.
And I knew from getting to know Linda back then that she was more tuned in to learning from school about certain things.
Sure.
Like when we first met, she was looking at those early Christian churches. She was doing all kinds of things. And it was like, oh, yeah, huh.
Yeah.
You know, waking up to a lot of stuff that she was really tuning into.
Art history meant a lot to me more than it did him.
Yeah.
Particularly architecture and sculpture.
Yeah. So we're still kind of like that.
Yeah.
She's really focused in another way.
Yeah.
And I have my own focus, but I don't know. They're different. That's not.
I guess a sort of related question would be how you know over the time that you've been working in Fort Worth or in DFW area more broadly, I wondered about kind of your sense of this as a place and kind of whether you know as artists how you relate to kind of the context of, around here and how that might affect what you're thinking about and working on.
That's good question.
Well, I think that neither of us particularly wanted to try to live in New York.
Yeah.
Like the land and the
prairie. Yeah.
And the idea of an open place like Texas is still even right now. Yeah.
So
I think that was important to us, the landscape and a kind of freedom here. That you could pretty much be, you didn't have to be around other artists if you didn't want to be.
Yeah, you have enough space.
Be isolated and do your thing, which is kind of what we've always done, is not get into too much of an art. Since we have each other, we pretty much.
Yeah,
that's in that. yeah, we have what we need for the moment.
Well, looking back also, that I can see in a way a need for interaction with other artists, and maybe me more than in that regard. And so I'd always made sure that I was coming. Once we got out of school and realized, oh, we don't have these other people around.
Yeah.
It was like seeking out some people that you could communicate with. Yeah. But an interesting little side note on that whole thing about that being in this area is it's pretty much like Linda described it, with this other edge that I remember in the late 60s. And maybe this was more pronounced with me, it probably was, and why I'm remembering it slightly differently. But there was always this thought, like, we probably need to be somewhere else if we're going to get anything going as an artist. We need to be somewhere else. And then, well, that was New York or LA, but more New York then. And we actually entertained the possibility a couple of times around that period, the late 60s and into the early 70s. Of moving. That was kind of always like, should we do that?
Yeah.
To be in that larger art.
Yeah.
Okay, this is the edge that came in, was Henry Hopkins coming to the modern.
Yeah.
And it had been much more provincial, the modern.
Yeah.
And Fort Worth. And he opened it up in a way and started inviting these artists from outside, and Rauschenberg, yeah, and Oldenburg.
And yeah, we got to meet them at dinner with them, which was like,
Yeah, wow.
It was just changed the feeling of the whole place.
Yeah.
And it was kind of like, there's stuff going on here.
Yeah.
That wasn't 2 or 3 years before.
Yeah.
And he also started including artists in shows that he would put together, you know, and buying art from Texas artists. So it was almost a turn when he got here about 69, was it 69?
Yeah,
68 somewhere.
Yeah. There's something else I mentioned a moment ago, Ed. I wanted to ask again about I read, actually, I was doing research and I read D. Mitchell's review of the show of the Bible paintings in art form, and I thought this was really interesting because this what he said was that he went in and was sort of suspicious. He said he wasn't sure if he was ready to deal with it, but then he was actually very favorably impressed by the paintings, and he said that instead of the kind of subjects that you might find in a Baroque church, like the Annunciation or the Resurrection, that the subjects were ones like David and Goliath, Cain and Abel, that were kind of these dramatic stories that, you know, like a kids would be interested in. And as I read that, I was thinking, oh, right, you know, like Eddie Leon, like, you know, exciting, dramatic stories, and there's some violence, and there's some this and that. So so I wonder if, is that the same kind of approach that you would bring to those, I mean, the sense of what you're looking for in terms of drama and narrative and kind of excitement? Does it all kind of fit together that way?
Yeah, I think definitely.
Yeah.
It does fit together. And because the narrative running through it and the tension that comes from that was definitely right in the middle of those Bible paintings.
Yeah.
I mean, I wanted to do them because to me, the stories are meaningful.
Yeah.
And, but you know what? It seems like always this kind of comes back around to whether either one of us are talking about it. It's like, because Linda talks about this a lot in these cowboy paintings that she's been doing recently, that the mystery and the drama and all of those elements that we're talking about that are in these narratives, that really is the finally the mystery and the drama and the discovery and all of that is when you make a painting or a drawing.
Yeah, it comes together.
You're really discovering how to do it. And even though the narrative is on the front, the surface, that's the real interest and excitement of it, is making that discovery as a painting or a drawing.
Yeah.
You know, and how it works.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure I'm really answering your question right, but there's a definite correlation about that with the Bible painting. Yeah.
You know, Jeff Kelly, who was at UTA, and he had a show commemorating the JFK assassination in Dallas. It must have been an anniversary year or something. And he asked some artists to come and do a piece that had something to do with the JFK assassination. And Ed did, and I was totally amazed that he did this. And then I got to be amazed at the story, because he ended the story of Cain and Abel, a big painting of Cain and Abel, where Cain rose up and slew his brother. And that just sort of showed you the whole idea of Bible paintings having that same moral,
What do you mean about before the Bible paintings, the movie paintings, and kind of the drama and, you know, Gunfight at OK Corral, or, you know, The Law of Jude Wade, and just kind of these other, you know, violence, action, you know, kind of spy, you know, kind of elements. So even before the Bible paintings, there was already kind of that, you know, idea building up and kind of continuing.
And the Hitchcock movies too seem to have that always that thing of a person defending themselves, and there's always a moral edge at the end, you know, that good versus evil, always wins out.
Yeah, because I was thinking about the Tyler Museum of Art's maroon painting, you know, Gregory Peck, you know, with the rape, you know, saving the day.
Those are pretty basic. And that JFK painting, it just seemed like a fit. And then I thought about it later, and somebody asked me to describe it. How does this fit in to JFK? And I just thought, you made the ultimate bad decision. This is how you resolve something. Bad decision. So
that bringing up, I think, bringing up this question of moral and good and bad and so forth. I wanted to ask. Part of what's going on, I think, with some of these classic film noir. Right, that sort of gets topsy. You don't know who's good and who's bad, or if anyone's, you know, out there trying to actually make things right or not, or if it's all just purely kind of unsettled. And I wonder, coming back to I think Ed, what you mentioned at the beginning, the way Eddie Leon is a little bit like he's kind of on this quest for art, or like his searching is kind of like searching in the way that we want to find something in of art. I guess, do you feel like when you're presenting your artwork to viewers that this that kind of question, you know, Cain and Abel, engaging with the morality question, kind of secondary to just the visual? I don't know if that makes sense.
No, makes perfect sense to me.
I think it's probably in there, but understated. You don't really think about it when you're doing it, you know, just who you are.
Yeah.
You know, that's what is attractive to you somehow.
Yeah.
Innate in your spirit or something.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it seems like also when you're doing that, when you're making those decisions, you know, you're making a series of decisions about this piece of work.
Yeah.
And the idea of when is it good? Is it a good piece?
Yeah.
It's a real moral question.
Yeah.
I think it was Ben Shahn, I think it was in that book of his, Shape of Content, he said, art is a series of decisions. And I went across that and wondering what that exactly meant. And it makes more and more sense to me. But the art just, you know, you do it, as Linda was saying, you do it so much intuitively, but it still has to have a wholeness and an integrity. And all those things kind of come back to truth and honesty.
Yeah.
Does it all come together? And so I think it really is a moral question underneath the whole thing. Probably not all artists would frame it that way, for even maybe in their own minds, but probably if you took their answer to when did you decide this piece work?
Yeah.
It would kind of come back to those sorts of judgment call.
Yeah,
even if you look at some great classical artists, be solid and true. I don't know, there's a great idea. A certain order gives, that's what gives it value as time goes by.
Yeah.
You don't, you can't dismiss it, it's there. And that's why artists, you know, people love to continue to look at it, because those are qualities that the human psyche wants.
Well, finally, let me just ask if you might be able to tell us a little bit about what you might be currently working on. If I don't know if you're working on more Eddie Leon right now, or individually, if you have other projects that.
No.
We have any more Eddie Leon,
or just other things that you might have.
No.
Be working on.
I do these kind of partly fictional and partly dramatic Western movie things, but they're really more painting than they are Western, would you say? They're not.
Yeah.
They're more like paintings. They have these Western dramas going on, but they're predominantly, they're these people working out something in a dramatic landscape, and the landscape has more prevalence than anything else. It's like the drama of the sky, and the order of everything is more important to me. The order and the balance and everything is a stage for a drama that's going on.
So she's got this series going on as a bystander, as an observer, I would say. This seems to still be going, you know, it's going along. And so she's been really continues to be involved with that. And I've got a series of paintings that I've had over the last 2 or 3 years that are related to media and news events, but they're a little different edge to them. And then I have this thing I do on this web, on this mailing that I do, that's has to do with both news imagery and then just making art in Photoshop, and sending it out. I sort of concocted this idea that I was going to have this show. It started about 4 years ago, and I would send out a couple of things a week, 2 or 3 sometime.
Email and art.
And it's sort of like an idea that it's a new medium as far as I'm concerned, in the sense that it exists in this little space that we call email.
Yeah.
And you can send it out, and it's really just there. It's not a site for putting drawings or paintings or something. It's just there.
Yeah.
So I stay pretty involved with that still at this point. It's sort of an exhibition.
Yes.
It's called Not Exactly.
Not Exactly. Yeah.
And is it possible for, if someone might be listening, is it possible for people to request to be added to this?
Oh, sure. Yeah. Totally. That's how it goes.
Say I was interested in getting, would I just email you, or?
Give me your address, or you can email me.
Or if anyone, would you be willing to share your email if anyone's listening to this and wants to hear it?
Oh, sure. Yeah. Sure. It's just, if you want to get on it, it's our email.
Okay.
And which you can maybe, anyways, Blackburn. Okay. Okay. @3901@charter.net.
Okay.
And I was sort of have 150 people in about that. It sort of split up into groups so that it doesn't get clogged up.
Movie images and then free drawing on top and poems, and then he makes that piece of real poetry that's always been. Got those words in there, and then political comments. Well, they're not really, tries to stay cool in his political commentary.
Right. which is hard.
It's a good challenge. But the idea is to to make images that are about the news, but they're enabling one to see it in a fresh way.
Yeah.
So meaning, make art out of that.
Yeah.
And so I do try to sort of make it just about itself and not really my political stance.
Sure.
But yeah, it's just a combination of that and making art. But so that's sort of what I'm going with me. And the other is also the paintings. So that's our two thrusts right now, I guess.
Right. We've been talking with the curator Caleb Bell and the artists Linda and Ed Blackburn about the exhibition Ed Leon Returns, Narrative Work by Ray Madison at the Eating Room. Thank you all for speaking.
Yeah, this has been such a nice way to have an interview because the questions are great.
Oh, well,
yeah.
It's certainly a pleasure. This is the Athenaeum Review podcast, and you can find out more at athenaeumreview.org.